The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, so it's time for the weekly visit of our good friend Dr. Peter Hammond. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
With you, yes. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. It is 10 a.m. this Tuesday, February the 18th, 2025, here in London, making it midday in Cape Town, South Africa, where Peter is joining us from. The title of today's presentation is The Real Story of the Immigration Invasion and Demographic Time Bomb that Threatens Western Civilization. So, Peter, where would you like to start us off with this very topical, timely topic today?
Yes, so I think the deportations taking place in America has brought the subject back up into the forefront. It just shows you can actually do something about the illegal immigration. All these people flinging up their hands saying you cannot. But first of all, there's a scripture verse that I think very few pulpits ever preach. Exodus chapter 23, verse 33. Exodus 23, 33. "They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you." Now, I grew up in a beautiful country, Rhodesia, and snares were one of the hideous things we would sometimes be mobilized to destroy, because snares are absolutely ghastly. Animals have been known to eat their way through their own leg to try and get free of a snare, these horrible wires that bites into their, not only their fur and their flesh, but into their bones even. And to try and get out of a snare, animals have been known to try and literally bite off their limb. And it's a horrible thing, a snare. You don't want to be caught in a snare. And so the scripture's warning us that if you let the foreigners come in and take over your land, they could have you to serve their gods. It could affect your religion, your faithfulness to the Lord, and it could be a snare to you. And we read a lot of the Old Testament warns us how that very thing became a snare to many. Even the wisest man in the world, Solomon, he was obviously wiser in his mind than he was in his choices and actions. Solomon got into marrying foreign wives, and they became a snare to him and corrupted the whole of Israel in the end. Now, globalists have used wars and economic depressions and recessions and population control to undermine Western civilization and to try and bring about their new world disorder. And the Islamic invasion, I called a Trojan horse. This mass migration into Europe, especially what got launched from the Arab Spring. Think in 2012, the Arab Spring was funded by USAID, by the State Department, by the CIA, who roughly all worked together anyway. And they toppled stable governments in North Africa, like Tunisia and Egypt, and stimulated a mass human wave tsunami of immigration, of people fleeing the destabilization of North Africa, which the US had funded through the State Department. That's under Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton, and even the war in Sudan, Syria, and that led to millions upon millions of people fleeing. Of course, you've got to also add the bombing and destabilizing of Libya, which came but before that. But the Arab Spring did catastrophic damage not only to North Africa and the Middle East, but it did catastrophic damage to Europe, bringing a an immigration invasion, which literally is a demographic time bomb that could threaten the future of Western civilization. And so you're seeing demographic engineering going on here. And to understand what's at stake in this Trojan horse, you need to consider the fate of Egypt, Byzantine, and Sudan. For many centuries, Egypt was the greatest economic military superpower in the world. But in the 7th century, Egypt was conquered and colonized by Muslim Arabs from Saudi Arabia. Now, the language in Egypt today is Arabian, but Arabic is not the language of Egypt or anywhere in Africa. Arabic is a language from Saudi Arabia. And today, Egyptians are a minority in what used to be a Christian country. For 1,000 years, Egypt had a Christian majority, even for a couple hundred years after the Arabians had conquered and colonized Egypt. The Christians were still a majority of the population. Today, Egyptian Copts, because a Copt is an Egyptian Copt makes up barely 12% of the total population of what was, bear in mind, Egypt was the superpower. It was the economic, military, political superpower of the ancient world. And today, Egyptians are a minority in their own country and seriously oppressed and persecuted at that. And so you can see demographics is destiny. And if anyone doubts that London could become Londinistan, or that Europe could become Eurabia, or that America could become Ameristan, they haven't considered what multiculturalism and mass migration did for Egypt, what today we call Turkey, but for which for well over a century was Christian Byzantine. It was part of Christendom. In fact, what today is called Istanbul was once Constantinople, which had the greatest Christian church in the world, St. Sophie, which today has turned into a mosque. And, you know, people may find it hard to believe, but you've got to study history. For 1,000 years, Byzantium was the greatest economic, military, political superpower in the world. But on the 29th of May in AD 1453, the greatest city in the world, Constantinople, fell to Muslim Turks who put the entire city to the sword, slaughtering tens of thousands of civilians, including 12,000 people in the greatest Christian church in the world at that time, the Hagia Sophia. And to think at one time, President Barack Hussein Obama walked around the Hagia Sophia praising this advanced Islamic architecture. It's not possible that anybody could have been that stupid and so ignorant as to think that this is Islamic architecture. St. Sophie was a great Christian Coptic church, a magnificent cathedral. But what he is also ignoring is the fact that it was the scene of one of the worst massacres in history. 12,000 men, women, and children, especially old people and women and children, were slaughtered, massacred inside St. Sophie on the 29th of May, 1453, as the Turks took over. But today, even the name has been changed. Constantinople is now called Istanbul. And what was once a vibrant Christian civilization and a political entity for over a millennium is today called Turkey. And Christians are a very small, minuscule, persecuted minority in Turkey. Turks are, by the way, the largest unreached people group in the world. From a missiology point of view, the Turks are the largest group of people who are unreached. And to think that used to be such a vibrant Christian civilization that the seven churches mentioned in Revelation, the letters to the seven churches, every one of those churches were in what today is called Turkey, what was at one time Asia Minor, and what for millennium was Byzantine, or the Eastern Roman Empire. And another example is how Christianity died out in northern Sudan. For 1,000 years, Christianity predominated in northern Sudan, what today is Islamic Sharia law Sudan. From the 6th century to the 15th century, Christianity was the official religion of three northern Christian kingdoms, Nubia, Alwa, and Mercurio, later Tetawa. For 900 years, the black Christians of Sudan, northern Sudan, successfully resisted the southward expansion of Islam. And it's an historic fact. The Christian kingdoms of northern Sudan did not fall militarily. They fell through continuous migration of Arab traders and merchants into Sudan, which eroded the Christian civilization, which had stood for centuries, as the influence of Islam increased. And as Sudanese intermarried with Arabs, Muslims came to dominate the marketplaces and the trading routes. It's worthwhile knowing that in Islam, Muslim men can marry Christian women, but Muslim women are not allowed to marry Christian men. And the reason is because the men control the children. And so the idea was that Muslim men could marry Christian women to breed Muslim children, and they would be raised as Christian children. But you couldn't have a Muslim woman marrying a Christian man, because then the children could be brought up as Christians. So it's very strategic. Bearing in mind also, Islam allows the adherents to have up to four wives at a time. And sometimes they have had Muslims who are called good Muslims who've had 60 or more marriages over the years, but never more than four at a time. There are Muslims who've had more than 1,000 wives. There's Muslims who've had more than 600 and still called good Muslims because they only had four at a time. And there's cases in Indonesia and other areas of the Muslim world where there are people who've literally had hundreds of wives, but never more than four at a time. And therefore, they're considered still good Muslims. They haven't broken their moral codes. So Christianity was exterminated in northern Sudan as the Muslims came to dominate the marketplaces, the trading routes, and demographically they became the majority, and Christians became the minority and became a persecuted minority in what had been a Christian civilization for 1,000 years. So again, you come back to Exodus 23, verse 33. They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me, for if you serve their gods, it will surely become a snare to you. So we've got the examples of Egypt, Byzantine, and Sudan, who at one time were great superpowers, but today they are minorities, persecuted, oppressed minorities, in a country that is unrecognizable culturally, religiously, or even demographically. Because demographics is destiny. And I think it's so important for us to bear in mind that what's going on right now is a real hijacking of civilization. It's an immigration invasion. It's a time bomb that threatens the future existence of Western civilization, literally. And the sharp decline of the birth of Europeans and the massive influx of Muslim immigrants into Europe, for example, is intended by the powers that should not be, the World Economic Forum, the globalist elite, the Sabbateans. They are actually actively, deliberately working for a transformation of Europe into Eurabia. And the goal in all of this is a world population more amenable to manipulation and control by globalists. So I've got the stats. I went onto the EU website, and the EU website informs us that there are today 44.7 million people. That's almost 10% of the population of the EU. The EU, the European Union, has got 449 million people living in the EU as of 2024. And they say 44.7 million people living in Europe today were born outside of Europe. And so that, I think, is kind of a stunning number, because remember, we're not just talking about that 45 million odd, we're talking about all the children born to them who are considered to be born in Europe, and they're either considered French or German or Swedish or wherever, even though they are foreign born. They might be Arabs, they might be Africans, they might be Asian, but most of them would be Arabs and Muslim. Now, from America being a mostly Protestant Christian nation of people from a European background, the promotion of population-controlled methods suppressed the growth of Protestant Americans and stimulated a huge influx of immigrants, mostly from third world nations. And they brought America to the position where the demographics have been radically altered. You just need to look at an old film. I mean, go and look at a film like Hitchcock's North by Northwest and see what New York used to look like. And then have a look at what it looks like today. And, you know, like spot the white American. And according to America's official records right now, there are 46 million foreign-born residents in America as of 2022. In fact, that's increased by several million since. So more than 46 million people living in America right now are foreign-born. And just in 2022, immigrants accounted for 14% of the population. That means more than 14% of the population in America were not even born in the United States. And they're foreigners, in many cases, racially different, religiously different, culturally different, linguistically different. And this number has grown since. And of course, that's not counting their children that were born to them in the United States, which would bring it much higher. But that's not counting the illegal migrants. United States of America, as of 2022, had 14 million illegal immigrants or illegal migrants in America. It's believed to be over 20 million right now, and some say it could be over 30 million. It's very hard to count illegals because, of course, they don't come into any normal counting system or registration. But you've got anything from 14 to 20 million or more illegal migrants in America right now, although they're starting to expel them. Now, in the United Kingdom, the foreign-born population in the United Kingdom increased from 5 million in 2004, just 2004, to over 9 million in 2018. I haven't seen an official stat on your Home Office web of anything beyond 2018, but there's, of course, been millions more. I think some outside estimates are you could have more than 11 million foreign-born people living in the United Kingdom right now. That's not counting the children born to them either, of course. So how did this happen? According to Pew Research, by the way, in 2017, which is a long time ago, there were up to 1.2 million illegal migrants in the United Kingdom. And of course, that's increased greatly since then. So 1.2 million illegal migrants plus about 10 million foreign-born population UK, plus the children born to them who are mostly on welfare and so on. So this is a demographic time bomb. This means that at this moment, there are many cities in the United Kingdom, including London, which have Muslim mayors. And there are many parts of the United Kingdom where the English people are becoming a minority, such as London. I believe in London itself, you've got more foreigners than you actually have English people, if you're just thinking linguistically, culturally, racially, ethnically, and so on. So it's a stunning situation. This is a massive, dramatic transformation of the countries. And if you consider how did this happen, well, the church has been neutralized and distracted. And the church has been distracted by false doctrines and heresies, which have been very vigorously promoted, including pacifism. Pacifism, the idea that you shouldn't fight. What do you think previous generations of Englishmen would think? What would people like Alfred the Great think of allowing millions of foreigners to come into England without resistance? He established the English Navy for the very reason of protecting the British Isles from Viking invasions. And he, of course, worked hard, fought many battles to win Vikings to Christ, to defeat them in battle, and then to have them converted to Christ, because he recognized that the Vikings were a threat to the future of England. And in fact, Angleland was being turned into Danelaw, and Alfred resisted it. What do you think Richard the Lionheart would think, who spent so long on crusades? I think he spent less than 4 months living in England in his more than 11 years that he was King of England, because he's busy in the Holy Land fighting against the Saracens, the Muslim jihadists. And what do you think Richard the Lionheart would think about bringing in Muslims by the millions into Great Britain? Absolutely staggering. I've also heard another statistic that more immigrants came into England in the last 12 months than in the 1,000 years from 1066 all the way through to recent years, like, say, from 1066 to 1945. More people come into England in a single year than came to England for something like 900 years. So that's a staggering statistic and thought. So how is this possible that the church stands by and not only does nothing, but actually aids this demographic time bomb, this absolute immigration invasion, this white genocide, which could easily lead to population replacement? And that's not a theory. Some people call that a conspiracy theory. There are many who are advocating for the genocide of whites openly. In fact, I've seen the big posters. I've got pictures of them in my presentations of protesters in California campaigning for immigration, for illegals coming into the country, against deporting foreign born people and illegal aliens. And amongst the different posters are, "Your grandchildren will be brown, LOL, laugh out loud." Another one was, "This Jew will replace you." And, you know, these are people lifting up these posters. And you also saw in the same demonstrations, "Keep God out of California." Literally, "Keep God out of California." And if only Mary had had an abortion, we wouldn't have these problems today. I mean, the blasphemous hatred and hostility to Christianity, evidenced by many of these people. Another one of the demonstration posts I saw of pictures from California was, "If Jesus comes back, crucify him again and cremate him so he cannot rise from dead." I mean, literally, can you imagine such idiotic, blasphemous, antichrist slogans? And yet that's the kind of hostility you're seeing right now. And the church is being distracted by an absolute obsession with rapture fever. Lord, rescue us out of our responsibilities here. Because see, antinomianism has gutted the church of the law of God. The Bible says the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. But instead, we've got defeatism, escapism, neutralizing many churches, worldly music, age-segregated services, youth groups which entertain rather than educate, have further undermined any Christian resistance to New World disorder. And discernment is at a very low ebb in the average Western church today. Sensationalism, materialism, idolatrous elevating of high-profile televangelists and faith healers have sidetracked many believers from fulfilling the Great Commission, making disciples of all nations, teaching obedience to all things the Lord has commanded. And most Christians barely notice that the secular humanists have hijacked their schools, and they continue to send their children to the Philistines to effectively indoctrinate them. So instead of schools that educate and teach children to think critically, they're effectively anti-Christian brainwashing gulags. And many theological seminaries have generally been infiltrated by liberal theologians and those who hold on to theistic evolution, that you came from nothing, life is meaningless, you're going nowhere, a whole lot of time and a whole lot of nothing made everything. And there's many so-called Christians who now believe in evolution. The resulting undermining of biblical Christianity throughout many denominations is like a cancer working its way through what used to be a healthy body. And history testifies how God has blessed and used the Christian nations of Europe to bless all the families and nations of the earth. The Protestant nations of Western Europe have a great Christian heritage. Despite violent opposition, Protestants emerged from the fires of persecution to change lives, to make history, to transform nations. And faithful believers contended for the faith. They preserved the Word of God. They translated the Word of God. They reformed the church, vigorously proclaiming the Word of God to all nations, despite being burned alive for the crime of translating the Bible into English. Christian civilization achieved the highest levels of productivity and innovation and scientific discoveries in history. The medical advances, the missionary outreaches, the works of mercy, which successfully campaigned to end the slave trade, to set the captives free, laying the foundations for justice through the rule of law. It grew under the Protestant Reformation, and the Christian legacy of faith and freedom throughout Christian Europe is unparalleled in the history of the world. And the 19th century was the greatest century of missionary advance, a century of astounding inventions, spectacular advances in technology. Many countries experienced dramatic spiritual revivals. Christian missionaries won whole tribes and whole nations to Christ in the remotest regions of the globe, including winning over the cannibals of the Pacific Islands to sing "Jesus Shall Reign" and devoting the entire nation to Christ. Christianity came to the beginning of the 20th century on a rising, apparently unstoppable tide. Christianity was gaining spectacular momentum as missionaries from Europe were evangelizing and discipling virtually every tribe and nation worldwide. And by 1914, the Protestant faith had far outstripped the Catholic and Orthodox branches in missionary activity, in vitality and initiative. And the Protestant faith was becoming the dominant faith of the most productive, powerful, prosperous nations in both the Northern and the Southern Hemisphere. The Protestant nations, Germany, Great Britain, United States of America, Canada, and in the Southern Hemisphere, South Africa, Australia, absolutely catapulting ahead of all other nations. And so at the world's first missions conference in Edinburgh in 1910, delegates were openly speaking about the beginning of the biblical millennium on earth. In 1910, the delegates were anticipating the completion of the Great Commission of Christ within their generation. In 1910, they predicted that by 1960, just 50 years ahead, all fake religions would be extinct. False religions and heathenism would have disappeared. And they anticipated the beginning of the biblical millennium by as early as 1960. Now, something went horribly wrong to derail all this optimism of coming out of the greatest century of missions in the 19th century. And that was, of course, 1914. The guns of August 1914 erupted. The great Christian nations, which had been the heartland of Christianity, of Christendom, the source of most of the world's missionaries, devastated each other's economies, annihilated millions of one another's young men in what has to be recognized as the most tragic, senseless conflict in all of history. The Great War, the war to end all wars, as they called it, the First World War, was catastrophic. Millions and millions of Christian men, many of them Protestants, wiped out. And behind the scenes, you can see the sinister hands of the banksters who pulled the strings and engineered the genocide of Europe. The banksters, I call them banksters because it's a mix between banker and gangster, the ones who owned many of the companies that made the machine guns, the bullets, the bombs, the shells, the artillery, that destroyed the cream of Europe. There are numerous studies that showed the role of the Freemason bankers and politicians like Nathan Rothschild, whose goals were stated to bring down Christian civilization. They were Sabbateans. They were part of the Illuminati. They openly, deliberately wanted to bring down Christianity, and you couldn't bring down Christianity by yourself. You had to get the Christians to do it for you, to get the Christians to kill one another, to sanction one another, to starve one another, to bomb one another. And so the greatest missionary-sending countries on earth, Great Britain, the United States, and Germany, were the worst devastated as a result of this and distracted and derailed by the First World War. Nothing could have stopped the positive onward march of Christianity worldwide except that Christians were persuaded to kill one another so enthusiastically and so effectively in the First World War. But even more devastating than the actual numbers of people killed or crippled or severely injured was the damage to the spiritual life of Europe, the secularization of Europe, the breakdown of moral standards, coincided with a great resurgence of revolutionary fervor and Marxist communism, which filled the vacuum left by the collapse of the Russian Empire, the German Empire, and the Austrian Empire. And just a statistic to wake one up to this, before 1914, the average European were in church was 64% of Europeans were in church on average every single Sunday, 64%, 1914. By 1938, before the Second World War, church attendance was something around 40% on average in Europe. So it deteriorated from the 64% down to 40%. Well, after the Second World War, church attendance plummeted to 4% on average in Europe. Absolutely catastrophic. The 19th century was the greatest century of missionary advance, but the 20th century turned into the worst century of persecution history. More Christians were martyred for their faith in the 20th century than all the previous 19th centuries combined. So the 20th century has been the worst century for the Christian church in terms of religious freedom, persecution, absolutely the worst. The greatest century of persecution, I call it. So looking back over the last 100 years, you can discern how secular humanists systematically hijacked Christian civilization. They targeted the main culture-shaping institutions for infiltration: education, entertainment, news media, religious institutions, and political institutions. But that's not all. The key thing is that they sought to change the demographics, because the whole goal of the New World Order is to turn Europe into a multicultural mess, a secular multicultural mess, exterminating Christianity from the schools, the colleges, from society, from government itself. I believe that the British Parliament is considering a bill to end prayer. They've been having prayer and moments of silence at the beginning of Parliament for centuries now. And here there's a bill where members of Parliament are trying to get rid of prayer out of Parliament and moments of silence for meditation, believing that it's outdated and no longer relevant. Now, this is a very advanced stage of subversion of a society. And just take, for example, a couple of these quotes. So Muslims are invading countries all over the world under guise of being refugees and seeking peaceful asylum. But Muslim jihadists are declaring this, and this you get off their websites: we shall soon collect them in the name of the coming caliphate, we say to you, these are our sons, receive them, or we will send our armies to you. And hundreds of thousands of Muslim migrants, millions now, have poured into Europe, especially since the Arab Spring, funded by USAID and the State Department and the CIA, toppled stable governments in North Africa. And with the toppling of Libya, Tunisia, and Egypt, millions of Muslims have poured into Europe. And you now have over 45 million people living in EU who were not born there and who are foreign. And just another quote, one commentator said, this refugee crisis is a master plan to sneak well-trained ISIS terrorists disguised as refugees into Europe to be prepared to start an insurgency in the cities of Europe. Their main goal is to destabilize Europe. There was a banner unfolded on a German highway, which I've got a picture of, stating, your children will pray to Allah or they will die. And the Islamic State published a document entitled Libya, the strategic gateway for the Islamic State. And in this publication, the Islamic State exhorted Muslims, leave Libya, go across as refugees into Europe. And the publication informed the refugees, there are weapons from Gaddafi's arsenal and they're easy to obtain in Libya. And Libya's got a long coastline and Italy's got an even longer coastline. And you must look upon the southern Crusader states, which can easily be reached even by a rudimentary boat. Even a dinghy can reach Italy. And ISIS claimed they have already infiltrated 20,000 jihadists into Europe in just 1 year. And Saudi Arabia offered to help by building 200 mosques in Germany. Saudi Arabia didn't take a single refugee from the war in Syria, which they supported. But they weren't offering any food or shelter or medicine for the migrants, but they offered to build mosques in Germany, and the German government allowed them under Angela Merkel, who is a real traitor. What she did to damage Germany, she might be the worst chancellor in the history of Germany. And so Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, all close to Syria, were not willing to house a single Syrian refugee. But they funded them moving into Europe, and they funded mosques being built in Europe. So Zsolt Bayer, a politician in Hungary, declared in Budapest, there are all kinds of weapons, traditional weapons, chemical weapons, atomic weapons. But now we see there's also racial weapons. This is a weapon that they, the invisible hands, have employed against Europe. Why has everyone from all over the world all at once decided to start heading towards Europe? Why? Let us declare lively and level-headedly, this is an artificial, manufactured mass migration, and its goal is the final irreversible transformation of Europe and transformation of Europe's ethnic and religious composition. For this, they have already provided the necessary ideologies. The EU leaders in Brussels want to sell Europe from over our heads. They want to destroy our Europe. And this is not just something Hungarians are noticing. A senior imam, Sheikh Mohammed Ayeb, speaking at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, declared, Muslims must use the migration crisis to breed with Europeans, to conquer their countries. We will breed children with them because we shall conquer their countries. We shall trample them underfoot, Allah willing. And Prime Minister Viktor Orban of Hungary declared, we are not facing a refugee crisis. We are facing a migration crisis. Let's not forget that those who are arriving have been raised in another religion. They represent a radically different culture. Most of them are not Christians, but Muslims. This is an important question because Europe and European identity is rooted in Christianity. Is it not worrying in itself that European Christianity is now barely able to even keep Europe Christian? If we lose sight of this, the idea of Europe could become a minority interest in our own continent. And the Prime Minister of Slovakia, Robert Fico, observed, Slovakia is a Christian country. We cannot tolerate an influx of hundreds of thousands of Muslim migrants. We would like to start building mosques in our land and trying to change our nature, our culture, and the values of our state. If we do not start telling the truth about migration, we will never move from this spot. Even the British author Peter Hitchens wrote, we will not save refugees by destroying our own country. Actually, we cannot do what we like with this country. We have inherited it from our parents and from our grandparents, and we have a duty to hand this country on to our children and grandchildren, preferably improved, certainly undamaged. We cannot just give the country away to complete strangers on an impulse because it makes us feel good about ourselves. Thanks to 1,000 years of uninvaded peace, we have developed astonishing levels of trust, safety, and freedom. I'm amazed at how relaxed we are about giving all this away. Mass immigration means we adapt to them when they should be adapting to us. So now, on the basis of an emotional spasm, dressed up as generosity, are we going to abandon our legacy and decline our obligation to pass on our country like the enfeebled, wastrel heirs of an ancient inheritance, letting the great house and estate go to ruin? I can see neither sense nor justice in allowing these things to become a pretext for an unstoppable demographic revolution in which Europe merges its culture and its economy with North Africa and the Middle East. If we let this happen, Europe would lose almost all the things that make others want to live here. And you just think of Judges chapter 3. The word of God states in Judges chapter 3 verse 1, "These are the nations that the Lord left to test those Israelites who had not experienced any of the wars in Canaan. He did this only to teach warfare to the descendants of the Israelites who had not had previous battlefield experience. They were left to test the Israelites to see if they would obey the Lord's commands." And one of God's commands is that you are not to let them dwell in your land. Exodus 23 verse 33, "They shall not dwell in your land, lest they make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will prove to be a snare for you." And so we are facing a demographic time bomb disaster. Europe is actually in danger of falling to Islam. This is an urgent and serious need. We need a new reformation, a new back to the Bible reformation. We need a fresh spiritual revival. Only Christianity, and by that I mean true biblical Christianity, only Christianity can defeat radical Islam. Secular humanism and hedonism are no match for radical Islam. They cannot even understand it. By rejecting Christianity, Europe is committing spiritual suicide. By embracing secular humanism and welcoming Islamic immigration, Europe is committing a cultural, economic suicide. By intermarrying with Muslims, by building mosques and madrasas throughout the continent, Europe is betraying future generations to bondage. By rejecting God's law, Europe may soon fall under Islamic Sharia law. And those who think God's law is a burden, they're going to love Sharia law. Those who forget the lessons of history are doomed to repeat its failures. Guilt manipulation, gaslighting, Stockholm syndrome, indoctrination have neutralized Europe. We need to rediscover our history. Karl Marx declared the first battlefield is the rewriting of history. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn declared of Russia in 1917, "We forgot God." The Bolshevik Revolution occurred because Russians had forgotten God. And so we read in Judges chapter 2, verse 10, "Another generation grew up who knew neither the Lord nor what he had done. They provoked the Lord to anger." And I must say, I am horrified and shocked at what I see in Europe. When I visited London last year and met you, I couldn't believe what I saw in London. What obviously is a great capital of a great civilization now has people who look like absolute barbarians, savages, cannibals running around. You know, the tattoos, the body piercing, these people walk around half naked with full arm tattoos, with women with tattoos all over their legs, their arms, even their necks and their faces. It must have looked something like that when the missionaries went to the Pacific Islands and saw the cannibals all over these islands who were eating their neighbors with tattoos all over their bodies. What on earth has gone on to civilization that we've got a bunch of tribal savages now littering even something like Trafalgar Square, where everywhere you look, you see people who are in more states of undress than actually dressed, where they're literally half naked and walking around with their bodies more covered by tattoos than actual clothes. The savagery that you can see in Europe, which you can add with the paganism of a lot of the music, the so-called music, the noise masquerading as music, the art, the abortion culture, the LGBTQ movement, the CRT, all of that. By paganizing her population, Europe has perverted her society. And by importing millions of migrants, Europe is committing demographic suicide. And I think this has been brought to the forefront now that the United States has a government that's now exposing the crimes that many of these migrants have committed. Millions of migrants allowed into the United States of America over the years, but the most just in the last 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration, where they had effectively an open border. And each of these migrants, we learn, cost something in the region of $160,000 US dollars a year. And so they don't just perform crimes, and it's people who were murdered, raped, abused, beaten senseless. There's huge amounts of drug. So the human trafficking that's going on as a result of the open border, massive amounts of evil things taking place. And it's costing a lot to deport them. But as the border czar has said, it's worth it because they cost more if they stay. They become a burden on the welfare system. They continue to use all kinds of benefits that would have gone to citizens of America, but they've got so many municipalities that are undermining the whole situation because they call themselves sanctuary cities. And there's churches involved in encouraging illegal migrants who are, by definition, criminals. Now, there's of course, two extremes we need to guard against. There are those who refuse to see the crisis and say there's no problem, sort of like the proverbial ostrich putting their head in the sand. And then there's those who panic and say there's no hope. Now, both of these extremes are false. We must recognize the problems, honestly, soberly. Man is depraved. Our nation's on rebellion to God and rebellion to his word. And you sow what you sow, you reap. Sin inevitably reaps tremendous trouble. But we must also recognize God is sovereign, God is almighty. There is power in prayer, and the gospel is the power of God for the salvation of all who believe. So no Christian can say there's no hope. Neither should we say there's no problem. No problem and no hope represent two extremes which we must reject. We need to wake up to this urgent, serious crisis. Most churches are asleep or actually in apostasy, and the world is literally rushing on its way to hell. And there are others who are trying to turn their own countries into hell. And our prayer meetings are sparsely attended and are often lacking in fire and fervor. Most evangelical churches are engaging in little or no evangelism. If it would at least be just evangelizing the immigrants coming into our countries, that could do some good. But the churches aren't even evangelizing it. If anything, we're letting them evangelize us into their false religions or cults or sects or lifestyles. And missionary vision is very weak. Much of what is done in the name of missions has little to do with fulfilling the great commission of our Lord Jesus. We need to make disciples and teach obedience to all things the Lord has commanded. We need to understand Islam. We need to evangelize Muslims. And we need to resist Islamization and multiculturalism. We need to work for biblical reformation and spiritual revival in our countries. So I see we're in a real serious problem. Civilization is being hijacked. And for our listeners who don't seem to understand what's involved here, I am reminded of this every single day. I was brought up in magnificent civilization. Everything worked. Everything was clean, neat. Never used to see litter. Now you just see piles of rubbish and plastic and tins and bottles and styrofoam boxes and all kinds of debris all over the place. And it's like the city council no longer cares or they can't keep up with it. When I was born, Cape Town had a population of about 200,000. Today, we've got more than 4.5 million living in Cape Town. I'm one of the minority of Cape Townians who was born in my city. And everywhere I see the destruction of the civilization we've built up. And of course, if I go back to Rhodesia, where I was born, you can see even worse, where they have literally devastated the game reserves, where the government, the communist government that we were betrayed to, as Ian Smith well said, we were never beaten by our enemies. We were betrayed by our friends. And by our friends, he's referring to the British government, the British State Department, the British Foreign Office, the American State Department, who betrayed Rhodesia, who had been ally of Britain and America in the First and Second World War, in the Korean War, in the Malayan conflict. But we were betrayed into the hands of Marxist thugs who have not only massacred vast amounts of the people in the country, but they have actually gone and taken helicopter gunships and jet planes to machine gun up herds of elephant to harvest ivory and rhino horn to send to the allies in Red China and Vietnam. Absolutely disgusting destruction of God's creation. And we see this devastation everywhere in the schools where they are pumping out racist hatred, Marxist garbage, evolutionism, situation ethics, promoting every kind of perversion imaginable. And this kind of thing is taking place. We are now a minority in our own country. When I was born, white South Africans or Afrikaners were 1/3 of the population of South Africa. Today, we are not even 8%. And to give you another statistic, at the world's first missions conference in 1910, Christians were Western Europeans were, and Europeans were 32% of the population of the world. Today, Europeans are less than 8% of the population in the world. So my country, South Africa, is something of a, should we say, guinea pig or a model and a warning to the rest of the world. We also have gone from where we were a third of the population to where we are a minority in our own country. Now we're only 8% in our country, and the government has 140 different laws, race-based laws, discriminating against white people. And my sons are discriminated against because they're too male and too pale, to quote the favorite comment out there. And so there's an anti-white racist hatred. There's a genocide where we've actually got a political party led by a leader, Julius Malema, who leads this economic freedom fighters wearing red T-shirts, red berets, chanting, whole stadiums of tens of thousands of people chanting, kill, kill, shoot to kill, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. And they chant and sing like a zombie dance. And it's absolutely chilling to see this kind of genocidal race hatred continually lifted up by many of them. The daughters of Barack Hussein Obama were quoted saying, we look forward to when there's no more white people left on earth. And there are people working for that. And they're doing it by sterilization, promoting gender-affirming care, transgender surgeries where you can castrate the males, mastectomies for the girls, effectively sterilize people with genital mutilations, which are now called gender-affirming care. There's nothing care about transgender surgeries. I'm glad that they're banning it in America right now because it's absolutely wicked. And you think of these poor kids who cannot legally smoke cigarettes or get alcohol, but they can legally abort their babies or decide on transgender mutilations in order to sterilize them effectively. So you can see there's been a tremendous move to produce less Europeans. My own sister-in-law living in Austria was chided on the streets and rebuked by neighbors for having three children. My own wife was chided when she went back to her home country in Salzburg, being rebuked for having four children. Like, you know, don't you know about family planning? What's the matter with you? And here you've got Europeans literally looking at children as a problem. And so there was a time, like during before the Anglo-Boer War, the average Afrikaner woman had 12 children. And President Paul Kruger's wife had 17 children. But of course, we had something in the region of 30-odd thousand Boer women and children died in the British concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War as part of what Stephen Mitford Goodson called the genocide of the Boers, which was funded and promoted by the Rothschilds and their goal of, we've got to get control of the diamonds and the gold under the feet of the Boers' farms. And so the bringing down of the population, if we hadn't had so many women and children wiped out in these concentration camps during the Anglo-Boer War, today, the Afrikaners would be the biggest tribe in South Africa. There'd be more Afrikaners than there are Zulus or Xhosa right now. We'd be the largest tribe. And yet, because of that deliberate bringing down of our population in South Africa at a key time, when the average woman in South Africa was having literally 12 to 14 children each, you can imagine now Europe, how many children did your great-grandparents have? The average European woman before the First World War was having 4 to 8 children. And now you're lucky if they have one. They're more likely to adopt a dog and have an abortion. And this is the kind of way that the New World Disorder does demographic engineering to bring down the population of the targeted population and then bring in vast numbers of immigrants who are going to change the demographics because they don't like that generation, or should we say that race that says, give me liberty or give me death. My conscience has kept the word of God. No taxation without representation. They don't want those kind of people. They want the kind of people that they can bribe with welfare freebies and who they can control and tell them who to vote for, who will respond to mass manipulation. And we're just thinking of the Brave New World and 1984 prophetic books. But this is where we are. We're seeing a battle for the mind, infiltration and subversion. They're trying to rearrange reality. This is a matter of corrupt and conquer, or confuse, divide and conquer. We are facing a battle for civilization. It's a new world order where they're literally trying to be able to destroy our civilization. And we need to recognize a key part of it is the immigration invasion. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge, we read in Hosea 4, verse 6. And we need to recognize the tactics of the enemy. And it's absolutely vital that we reclaim our countries. Any politician who is not working to protect the borders of a sovereign country is a traitor. And we're facing a situation where literally Western civilization could be destroyed. I think it's vital for us to understand what we are facing and where we are going. We've got a tremendous amount of lessons to learn from history. And I don't know how we think that we can survive if we don't have borders and if we don't expel and ban people who come in illegally, because that's going to undermine the whole society. And here's a great quote from Cicero. 42 BC, the Roman leader Cicero stated, "A nation can survive its fools, even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known, he carries his banners openly. But the traitor moves among those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through all the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself. For the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in the accents familiar to his victims. He wears their face, he wears their garments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of the city. He infects the body politic so it can no longer resist. A murderer is less to be feared." And so this is what you're dealing with, treason. And I think in the United States, they've exposed this treason that you can see literally trillions of dollars from the public treasury unaccounted for, untraceable. You can see how billions have been wasted on funding the enemies of the country, stealing money from the taxpayer to pay for evil agendas that nobody in the country would have supported and which are undermining, is basically funding your own destruction. And the wastage of money in government, absolutely staggering. Aldous Huxley predicted this in 1932 when he published The Brave New World, describing a future state of human slavery where people live carefree lives in a technologically advanced society, subdued by drugs and bombarded with endless stimulations and distractions. Well, in the 21st century, we've seen the idols of atheism and humanism and communism become mainstream, and they're racing towards a new Babylonian type of New World Order, multiculturalism that threatens to destroy nations in this absolute babel of what the New World Disorder, the Trilateral Commission, Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, the Sabbateans, what they're doing behind the scenes. And the New World Order is trying to destroy those states that attempt to uphold Christian values. And this explains the extraordinary international campaigns that I witnessed against my homeland of Rhodesia and South Africa in the 60s, 70s, 80s, that all the world systems, whether you're talking about the Olympics, every single thing, international soccer, international rugby, they sanctioned South Africa and Rhodesia. We were fighting for our lives against communist terrorism, and yet our allies betrayed us. We were never beaten by our enemies. We were betrayed through our friends. And now we see our magnificent civilization and orderly society that we built up eroded and rotted from within. Corruption, stealing our resources, destroying monuments, destroying street names, destroying the names of towns, destroying the heritage and history of the past. And we are now a minority in our own country, and we've got to fight hard just to survive. And this is what lies ahead for the people of England and France, Germany and America, if they don't learn to reclaim their heritage, study your history, know what you stand for, know your heritage. And then you've got to drive out the illegal immigrants who are swamping your land. You've got to teach your people to marry within their own families, within their own cultures and civilizations. Here's a couple of scriptures that guided people for centuries. "Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. What fellowship has righteousness with lawlessness? What communion has light with darkness?" 2 Corinthians 6:14. Think of the words of Abraham, the father of the faithful. He ordered his servant in Genesis 24, verse 3, "And I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, amongst whom I dwell, but you shall go to my country and to my family, to my people, and take a wife for my son Isaac." And you can see the principles again and again. Genesis gives the principle. Genesis 28, verse 1, Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of the Canaanites." And Deuteronomy 7, verse 3, "Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son." And this is repeated again and again. Numbers 33, verse 55, "If you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land before you, it shall be that those whom you let remain will be irritants to your eyes, thorns in your sides. They shall harass you in the land where you dwell." And that is coming on. And the scriptures recall in 1 Kings 11, verse 2, "Many foreign women, as well as the daughters of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites and the Ammonites and the Edomites, the Sidonites and the Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, 'You shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn your hearts away after their gods.'" And when Ezra read the law and called the nation back to repentance, he warned them against intermarrying and mixed marriages with the daughters of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Jebusites, the Ammonites, the Moabites, the Egyptians, and the Amorites. And his great prayer of Ezra 9, "For they have taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves and for their sons, so that the holy seed is mixed with the peoples of those lands. Indeed, the hand of the leaders and the rulers has been foremost in this trespass. So when I heard this thing, I tore my garment and my robe. I plucked out some of the hair on my head and beard. I sat down astonished. Then everyone who trembled at the words of the God of Israel assembled with me. Because of the transgression of those who had been carried away captive, I sat astonished until the evening sacrifice. At the evening sacrifice, I arose from my fasting. Having torn my garment and my robe, I fell on my knees and I spread out my hands before Almighty God. And I said, 'O Lord, my God, I am too ashamed and humiliated to lift my face to you. My God, our iniquities have risen higher than our heads. Our guilt has grown up to the heavens. Therefore, do not give your daughters as wives for their sons, nor take their daughters to your sons, that you may be strong and eat the good of the land and leave it as an inheritance to your children forever.'" And so Ezra describes intermarrying with the heathen nations around them as our great guilt, our iniquity, our abomination. That's all in Ezra 9. Nehemiah also warned against the very same things, saying how they've defiled the priesthood and the covenant, and that he has commanded them to put away foreign wives. And the commandment, "Do not follow a crowd to do evil," Exodus 23, verse 2. "Do not be deceived," said the Apostle Paul. "Evil company corrupts good habits." That's 1 Corinthians 15, 33. So again and again, you can see the emphasis on not to adulterate the nation, not to violate and introduce any spurious offspring into the family or the nation. And this is a commandment that's been ignored. I don't know that I've heard a sermon on not being unequally yoked for many, many, many years. And it is a weakness here that you can see so many Christians are either not having children or are having children with people of other nations and thereby diluting or undermining the very existence of their nation. This is a demographic time bomb, and it could be absolutely catastrophic. And if people want to know what's the end game here, just look at Egypt, look at Sudan, look at Byzantine, which is today Turkey, and you can see how great Christian nations, superpowers of the past, are now minorities in their own country. So we need to be alert to the real story of the immigration invasion. It's a time bomb which threatens Western civilization. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. I'm just going to mute you for the moment because, as we know, it takes a while for the feed to catch up. Otherwise, I'd get it coming back at me. I'll just throw in a quick comment. Now, you said about all the tattoos and that in London, and, of course, it was a great pleasure to meet you there last year. And I, like you, had to make my way to where we met, and I saw something similar. But the interesting thing is you talked about the various tribes that would carry on these sorts of practices, and one need to only look at, for example, these stories on that El Salvador jail hellhole that pop up in the Daily Mail very often. Recently, you can see the sort of tattoos these people have all over their faces and what have you. These are mainly on white people in the UK. And the other thing is, certainly what I've seen, and of course, there will be people who accuse us of racism. For those people, can you please let them know the congregation you have in Frontline Fellowship?
Well, we certainly, our mission is interdenominational, interracial. We mainly are serving black people, Zulus, and people of many tribes, Chichewa, Bemba, Yao, nations across the Congo, Nigeria, Sudan. So I've worked throughout Africa. I've ministered in 38 countries, and obviously a lot of our work is for the people of different tribes. But what I don't think people in America or Europe understand much is that the tribes in Africa are very much against inter-tribal marriage, not just interracial marriage. They condemn even marrying a person of another tribe. And I've heard a minister, a Zulu minister, preaching from the pulpit that if you marry someone of another tribe, you don't respect your parents, your children won't be either the tribal nation of the father or the mother, and the grandparents, you don't even look like them, and so on. And so even the tribes in Africa are speaking out against this miscegenation because they see it as a rejection of their nation, their tribe, not honoring their parents, and against God's design. God created the different nations of the world. And just like you wouldn't expect to see a cheetah and a leopard getting together or a lion and a tiger, you shouldn't expect to have any interbreeding between different races of people. And then you get the people who say, but there is only one race, the human race. Well, they've got a problem there because the Bible speaks about every race and nation and tribe and language. So if the Bible recognizes it, who are we to discount it? And it's more a humanistic idea to say there's absolutely no difference between what can plainly be very visually different. And therefore, obviously, we are not racist. We are missionaries who are doing everything we can to serve the people of Africa of every tribe and language. And that's our mission and our background. But we're deeply distressed when we see a nation committing demographic suicide. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. Yes, and also one can only look at the book of Genesis and you see that God created people, I believe, in Genesis chapter 1, but he didn't create Adam, who he called a living soul, until Genesis chapter 2. And then we see from the Strong's exhaustive concordance of the Bible, which you can find on Amazon, I have a copy, you look at the dictionary part of that, and Adam is defined as of ruddy face, which for me would make him white. And that would make it quite interesting why there seems to be this targeting of white nations to essentially breed themselves out of existence in a variety of ways. That would indicate that there are some very evil people that are targeting the descendants of people that God called a living soul in the book of Genesis chapter 2, I believe. And what I'm going to do now, I'm going to play... Peter, can you hang on for about 5 more minutes?
Certainly.
Excellent. Okay, so I'm going to play a couple of videos. And what I've done here is I want to include them in the post for the show so you can look at them. So I have gone into my own website and I've looked up some posts. And the first one I'm going to play you, I included in a Limey show with Malefica Scott, December 3rd, 2023, that was called "Has Elon Musk Tweeted the Barbara Lerner Spectre YouTube Video Yet? Thought Not." And I have heard him complaining about immigration, but I've not heard him mention Barbara Lerner Spectre at all. Let's see if this link works. Oh, no, it's... hold on. No, that was the wrong... That's my fault. I clicked the wrong thing. I clicked the show. I need to click here for the... Here we go. Fingers crossed, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I think it's working. Oh, no, we've got a 6-minute ad at the start, so I don't think that's going to come up. I think that's going to be blocked, so I'm going to click that. And here we go, it's coming up now. Search.
As we heard, there are people in Sweden who support Israel and have a deep sense of the injustice of the present situation. It's these people who give hope to those who still believe that things will get better here. One of them is Barbara Spector, a former American who made Aliyah and then, 10 years ago, with the help of the government of Sweden, set up a non-denominational institute of Jewish learning with the Greek name of Paideia, here in Stockholm. She believes the current wave of anti-Semitism in Sweden will pass, and that Jews have an important role to play in a country undergoing profound change.
I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies that they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode, and Jews will be resented because of our leading role. But without that leading role and without that transformation, Europe will not survive.
Okay, so that was the first one that I wanted to play you. And the second one that I'm going to play you is a speech in the European Parliament by Nick Griffin of the British National Party. So he was a European member of the European Parliament, I think they call them, MEPs. Let's see if this one works, and I'll include this in the post for the show as well. Just coming up now. Yeah, I believe so. Here we go, folks.
Godfather of the European Union, Richard Kutanov Kalergi, published the plan for a united Europe and the ethnocide of the peoples of Europe. The encouragement of mass non-white immigration was central to the plot. Since then, an unholy alliance of leftists, capitalists and Zionist supremacists has schemed to promote immigration and miscegenation with the deliberate aim of breeding us out of existence in our own homelands. As indigenous resistance to this human genetic modification industry grows, the criminal elite seeks new ways to camouflage their project. First, their immigrant pawns were temporary guest workers. Then it was a multiracial experiment. Then they were refugees. Then the answer to a shrinking population. Different excuses, different lies. And asylum is just another one. But the real aim stays the same. The biggest genocide in human history. The final solution of the Christian European problem. This crime demands a new set of Nuremberg trials, and you people will be in the dock.
Mr. Griffin, there is a blue card for you from Mrs. Gomez, all right? Señora Gomez.
Mr. President, I'm really ashamed of the racist and xenophobic terms that were used by Mr. Griffin, and my only question to him is if he dare to make any concrete suggestions and amendments to the legislation. Is your policy serious, or are you just shouting? And I hope you will not be re-elected if you seek re-election, because it's a shame for this parliament the kind of statements you have just made.
Señor Griffin?
Mr. Griffin.
It's you that's shouting, because obviously the truth hurts. Yes, I will be seeking re-election. Yes, I hope to return here to speak up for the indigenous Europeans, which the founder of this place has deliberately set out to wipe out, because that is a crime. I'm telling the truth. I have a constructive suggestion to help those poor asylum seekers from Africa. Yes, make it clear they can't come here, so they don't try to cross the sea and drown in huge numbers. The best way for them is to get the banks off the backs of their countries so they can live in peace in their countries, and we Europeans can live in peace in ours. Thank you.
Gracias, señor Griffin.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin.
And there you go. And that was part of a show post that I did with Nick called Blue Card for Senor Griffin. But I believe we included it in most of our show posts together. Any comments on that speech by Nick Griffin,
yes,
Peter?
I'm particularly resonating with his comment that get the banks off the backs of the people in these countries and they'll not be seeking asylum here, which is true. Because many people have been... You think how stable the world used to be. When I was brought up in a stable civilization in Rhodesia, it was the destabilizing of our country by the World Banks, the United Nations, and the State Department, the British Foreign Office, working to undermine us, supporting the terrorists, the revolutionaries, the massacrists, and dictators of the future. They destabilize our countries and create massive amounts of human tidal waves of people fleeing the destabilizing and the wars created by these banksters and others. So that is a large part of it. And I think this has been proven now, how DOGE has exposed that USAID was funding the destabilizing of the stable governments in North Africa with the so-called Arab Spring, which led to the tidal wave of millions of migrants fleeing into Europe. This is engineered. This is not random. This is not spontaneous. This is orchestrated. And it comes in coordination with the wars in Europe and the myths and endless propaganda about massive overpopulation and limited resources. And so that they could go from, well, we've now got too few people being born in Europe. We need to import migrants to enable us to cope and to keep our population and our economies going. Well, they were the ones who destabilized on this side and the other side. This did not happen accidentally. Most people would prefer to stay in their countries. And unfortunately, I'm surrounded by people in South Africa where their children and their grandchildren are all overseas, and they've got to travel to the four corners of the world to visit their children and grandchildren in Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, and so on. Well, they would have been all happy to stay here. I remember when everybody knew their family, the great-grandparents, they're all living in the same country. It was because our countries were destabilized by these banksters' wars that people are moving all over the planet. And this destabilizing is deliberate. And it's being exposed with the migrants have caused so much crime and disruption in America right now as they're being expelled. I would hope that people around the world would get encouragement that when you can see that they're able to expel illegal migrants and criminals out of America, maybe other countries can get to do this too, because we've been living in some kind of multicultural melting pot for so long. It would be nice if countries could again restabilize themselves. And the key thing is, as the speaker there said, is to get the bankers off people's backs. There's a book out called Confessions of an Economic Hitman, where the man exposes how he was hired by USAID to get governments in Africa to take unrealistic, impossible loans that should make them basically slaves to the multinational, international companies and the banksters. And that this was part of his goal, was to go and destabilize third world countries by encouraging them to take unrealistic loans from the World Bank and so on. So there's a lot of truth here. And of course, Stephen Mitford Goodson exposed this quite well in his History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind. Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter. And before we go, I just want to let people know how they can, the importance of supporting shows such as this, and primarily because this is a show with Peter, I want you to look at the GiveSendGo page that is included in the post for this show at achshow.com, and please, if you have the wherewithal to do it, send Peter a donation. I know that there's a lot of people that ask out there, because they have been deplatformed, what have you. You really need to take a inventory of who you support and who you want to keep on the air. My solo show will probably be coming to an end. I thank the people who have supported it, but it's not enough of you for me to sustain it as a means to going on. So I'm going to have to find something else to do. But that being said, Peter, can you please let the audience know how they can contact you and where they can find your work?
Yes, thank you. We really do need partners and supporters, because we are struggling. You can see good causes don't get the funding of these kind of slush funds like USAID has been lavishing out to all the leftists out there. We depend on the widow's mite in many cases. So if you visit www.frontlinemissionsa.org, frontlinemissionsa.org, or email mission@frontline.org.za, or mission@frontline.org.za, I think Americans would say. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Peter. Fascinating information today, as always. Let's play the closing music. I want to thank all of you for joining us on a show entitled The Real Story of the Immigration Invasion and Demographic Time Bomb that Threatens Western Civilization. Peter and I will be back with you next Tuesday. I'll be back with you all tomorrow. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day, and bye for now.